Insurance isn't one size fits all. That's why drivers have enjoyed Progressive's Name Your Price tool for years now. With the Name Your Price tool, you tell them what you want to pay, and they'll show you options that fit your budget. So whether you're picking out your first policy or just looking for something that works better for you and your family, they make it easy to see your options. Visit Progressive.com. Find a rate that works for you with the Name Your Price tool. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pennywise Podcast, the best pod around for personal finance. We're part of the Lee Enterprises Podcast Network and brought to you in partnership with WalletHub, the best personal finance app in the whole wide world. You can sign up for WalletHub to save money, improve your credit, and budget better. I'm your host, John Kiernan. I'm the managing editor at WalletHub, and I've been covering personal finance for more than 15 years. My goal is to help you manage your money better and hopefully have a bit of fun in the process. Let us know if you have any questions or if there's something you want us to cover. But today, we're talking about how to save money. And not just a few dollars here and there. We're big game hunting, searching for hundreds of dollars in savings in just a few weeks. It's possible. And we'll talk about how. Several hundred extra dollars to play with is something many of us sorely need right now. And whether it comes from extra income or reduced expenses doesn't really matter. I mean, we're not asking too many questions as long as we save at the end of the day, right? Just consider these stats before our guest joins us here in a moment to kind of underscore how important this is right now. As we covered in the past couple of episodes, gas and food prices have gone up a lot over the recent years. For example, grocery prices roughly 25 to 30% higher than pre-pandemic levels, and a gallon of regular gas is over a dollar more expensive than it was a month ago. That's not all, unfortunately. Home prices are up about 80% since 2010 and nearly 30% since 2020. The median existing single-family home price is roughly five times the median household income. A family needs to earn over $110,000 a year to own a typical home, and that's about 29% more than what the median household actually makes, and double the income needed in 2019, if you can believe it. People aren't feeling too flush these days either. 2 in 3 Americans say the affordability crisis has affected their emergency savings. Nearly 1 in 5 Americans say they couldn't come up with $1,000 in cash within 24 hours, even if it was to save a loved one's life. And 83% of Americans with a budget say increasing costs are the biggest challenge they currently face when trying to stick to that budget. Don't get too down, though. As I mentioned, there are ways to fight back. There are ways to save. And while the deck may be stacked against us right now, that doesn't mean we still can't stack our chips sky high. We can. To help you maximize your savings this month and every month after that, I'd like to welcome our guest, Professor Dan Ariely of Duke University. In addition to his work for the dreaded Blue Devils, go Terps, Dan is a founding member of the Center for Advanced Hindsight, the co-founder of several companies, and the author of several best-selling books, including Dollars and Cents, How We Misthink Money, and How to Spend Smarter. Thanks for joining us, Dan.
My pleasure. Lovely to be here.
Lovely to have you. We know you're all over the internet these days. You're making a big impression. So it's great to have you on. To start, can you give us kind of a little bit of a bit about your background and kind of what your academic research focuses on?
Yeah, so as a background, I was badly injured when I was 18, almost 18. And I spent about 3 years in hospital. 70% of my body was burned. And that was the first time that I started thinking seriously about human irrationality. Here I was in a hospital, very, very painful. And I started thinking about lots of things that were happening that were not designed to maximize patients' welfare. Anyway, that was a start. And then I became an academic and I started studying irrationality. I started studying where are the places that we do things that are not the best for us. Okay. It's kind of a strange idea. They say, oh, don't we always know what's the best decision for us? No, turns out, no. And not only that we don't know, but there's sometimes somebody on the other side that wants us to make a mistake.
Yeah,
You go to the supermarket and you have a shopping list and you have a plan, and the supermarket also has a plan, and their plan is not the same as yours, and they want different things, and they control the supermarket. They control the aisles and what's at eye level and what's by the cashier. And they control how to display prices and all kinds of things like that, and we end up making mistakes. So I studied lots of things. I studied things in healthcare. I'm studying a lot of things about risk right now, decision making about end of life. But the biggest topic I've been studying throughout my career has been the psychology of money. How do we think about money? How we misthink about money? What are the mistakes that we make?
Very interesting. Have you figured it out?
We figure out, I would say we, because it's not just me, there's a field, but we figure out some of the big ones, some of the big ones. But one of the fascinating things with social science is that the world keeps on changing. So the world before credit cards was different than the world after credit cards. The world before Apple Pay and Google Pay was different. The world when interest rate was low was different than the rate when interest rate is high. So it's not as if there's one thing that you do and you forget it. It keeps on changing. Now, if you think about it now, we are bombarded with other people's agenda. You open your laptop and you browse the internet for your reading, and lots of people want you to do something else. It's not in your best interest, it's in their best interest, and they're trying to pull you. And we don't fail all the time, but we fail quite a lot.
So does that what you're saying, the kind of laboratory itself is changing over
That's
time?
right.
Does that mean the financial advice our grandparents and our parents gave us no longer applies, or is it just needs to be altered a little bit?
It's harder to do. So imagine that you lived in a world in which there were no iPhones and there were no Amazon shopping. And you went to the grocery store and you bought what's important and you went home and you cooked. The world has become a temptation economy. Like, think about the number of temptations that we face every day. So, an advice to say, don't listen to your temptation, remember your priority and your objective was always correct. It's just much harder to exercise now. Or think about what happens when retirement life expectancy goes up. When life expectancy is up to age 65, it's kind of easy to save for retirement. If it's 68, it's doable. When it's 90, what do you do? And when it's unknown, what do you do? Healthcare costs used to be very different. People also used to have not the defined contribution, but defined benefits. If you retired with a pension, and I told you, every month you have $4,321, you know how to manage. If I tell you, here's $500,000, it should last you until you like, it's really stressful. So yes, so lots of changes have made following the good advice much harder. Plus, there are things that are new that we have to figure out.
It's very interesting. So I guess just to tie it to the specific topic I sent you on, people are feeling stressed right now about how expensive things are and the costs are going up. We don't know how much they'll go up, how long it'll last. A lot depends on this war. Based on all those things, what would you say to someone who says, I really need to save $500 this month?
So first of all, I would say that this is a very, very tough period psychologically. There's a lot of stress, just a lot of stress. lots of unknown. I think we still haven't fully recovered from COVID.
Yeah.
We have lots of things coming, you know, the war in Ukraine, the Middle East, the uncertainty of the dollar, of oil prices. Very, very, very tough. It's very, very tough. It's stressful. Now, many times people are using shopping as a way to exert control. You know, we for our psychological health, we like to feel in control.
Yeah.
And one of the easiest ways to have control is to buy something. I come to a store, I give them a little plastic, they give me something, I change the world, I control something. Now, I understand the psychological needs, but the first thing I would tell people is I would say, I understand the need to exert control. Look for it in other places.
Yeah.
And ideally, you can look for it in exercise, you can look for it in eating, but you can even look at it in spending less. Spending more gives a sense of control, but spending less can also do the same thing. Where you say, you know what? I'm going to make myself coffee. Oh, I'm not going to like you can imagine how you can turn the table. It's very easy to have control by buying, but you can have control by deciding not to do something else instead. Now, just withholding doesn't feel like control. So buying a shirt is control. Not buying a shirt is not control. But putting the $30 you were going to buy on a shirt in a savings account is control.
Yeah.
So control is not doing nothing, it's doing something, but a different use, right? So I'm not just not buying coffee at the coffee shop, I'm making it at home and I'm putting $5 in
Yeah.
a jar. So
Container, yeah.
that will be one thing, is I would say we need to recognize the need for control, but we need to channel our control.
Sometimes
The
I
second
like
thing I would
an example popped in my head of that myself. Like, I don't like to online shop that much, but if I'm feeling that way, maybe I'll go buy some investments or like some stocks, and
Yep.
it's better than burning the money, you know, at least it's something.
That's right.
But sorry
That's
to
right.
interrupt you.
The second thing, we did an experiment where we asked people, we showed people this was digital, we could do it. We did it with a small bank, and they showed people their purchases, and for each purchase they say, do you regret it or not? Think about like a Tinder interface, regret, not regret. You swipe, you swipe. And you know, usually when we buy things, we buy it forward-looking. Oh, I think this will make me happy. Oh, I think this will make me happy. We rarely look at our credit card statement and say, how did it work out? I made all of these purchases thinking they would buy me happiness. Do they buy me happiness? And it turns out it's a very good exercise because when you ask the question of, let me cut $500 from my spending and putting into savings, what you're really asking is, what are the $500 that I'm spending that is not buying me the happiness I would like to? Because I don't want to tell you, oh, you know, take the thing that gives you the most joy and cut it out, right? It's implicitly saying, help me understand what are the things that are not giving me much joy, and let's cut those, right? So how do we do the exercise of finding what are the things that don't give us joy? A really good place to start is look at your credit card and say, oh, here is something I did last month. Now, if you paid your electricity bill, it didn't give you much joy, okay. You can't change that much. Can change a little bit, but not much. But if you say, oh, you know, I went to this restaurant with some friends, and we ended up having an appetizer and dessert, and we had a little bit too much wine, and I woke up the next morning not feeling so great. Was this a good? Did it buy me the happiness I thought it would, or did I get carried around as carry you know got carried when we were doing it, and I didn't pay attention, and I ended up spending too much and not enjoying it. So revisiting our spending categories and asking ourselves the question of, did it give us the right level of happiness, is really important. And that brings us to the next thing, which is, in general, people are not experts in what would get them to be happy.
Okay, yeah, I was gonna ask.
Like you would think that we would know. Now, things you've done before, you know, but things you haven't done, you don't know. So, what I would say next is make yourself a list of things you haven't tried and try them out. So, for example, you can say, okay, once a week I go out to dinner with friends. You can say, well, what if you change that? What if you went to play basketball with them? Or you went to have coffee with them, much, much cheaper. And then sit after that activity and ask yourself, how much did I lose in terms of happiness? And how much did I save in money? So let's say you go with your significant other to dinner and you say, oh, I'm going to replace it. I'm going to get two beers. We're going to sit on the bench in the park and we're going to have two beers and talk. And then you look at it and you say, oh, how much happiness do I get from a regular meal and how much did it cost me? How much did I happiness get here and how much did it cost me? And maybe you sacrifice some happiness. So, it was quite a wonderful evening anyway, and I saved $120 or something else. So the next thing is to say, I'm kind of understand the things I do, but there's lots of things I haven't done yet. Let me make a list of the things I haven't done and try them out. And try them out. Let me go to the cheapest restaurant in town. Let me at work bring lunch. Let me disconnect from cable for 2 months. Let me just see how it is. I'm not saying it will necessarily increase quality of life. But we need to try because the things we haven't tried, we might think we know how they would be, but we wouldn't. Then I'll give you one example, not for money at all. You ask people, how you're going on a train, you're going on a train ride for 30 minutes. What would be better? To talk to the random stranger sitting next to you or to sit with your headphones and nobody would talk to you? And people say, much better that nobody talks to me and I don't talk to them. And then you take a group of people and you say, you're an experiment and you have to talk to the person next to you. And they talk. And then at the end, you ask them, how was it? And on average, people said, much better than not talking to anybody.
Interesting.
Now, of course, it's a distribution. Sometimes it's terrible, but on average, it's better. But when we come to assess different things, we don't always know. We don't always know what would make us happy. If you say, I'm used to going to dinner with friends, let me just go and have, as we said before, a beer on the beach on the bench in the park, or playing, or going for a walk, or playing frisbee, or doing something else. I have a vague sense, but I don't really know how it will be. But try those things. So, after you evaluate your credit card statement and you say, oh, where are the things I know that I'm not optimizing? Look at places where you say, you know what, I haven't explored it yet. Let me try out for a while. And the for a while is sometimes important. If you want to reduce salt, the first time you reduce salt, food tastes terrible. 6 weeks later, you're getting used to it. Some things with money, we notice immediately, some things we have to try out. So I think that, for example, going to for a walk instead of going to a restaurant, we can know mostly right away. Cutting cable TV will take a while until we find another habit. So that's what I would say.
Very good and very interesting. I think, yeah, that'll give a lot of people things to tinker with and hopefully expand their life and find new joys to.
Can I say one last thing? We have all of these apps that track our walking, exercising, sleep. We don't have apps that really tracks our savings and make us proud of it. Yes, they track our savings, but they don't make us proud. You know, you walk 10,000 steps, all your apps go crazy and cheer and you get confetti and so on. You manage to save some money, nobody say it. On the contrary, if you're a breadwinner for your family and you save money, you bring less home. Like you save more, it's an invisible category, nobody knows. If you have debt and you're paying more of your debt this month, your kids are not going to smile more at you. They'll smile less. Why? Because you're taking away from them and you're putting to debt. Now, in 30 years from now, they will be better off. But today, their perception is you're bringing less home. And I think that we need to do something about it. We need to figure out how do we feel proud when we do the right thing financially. Right now, saving is like a marathon that nobody tells you where you are and there's no end point. They say, run as fast as you can. And we need to figure out success. I think that when people pay 10% of their car payment or 10% of their college loans or every 10% of your house mortgage, you need to celebrate. We need to find these points where we would feel we've achieved something. Let's feel good about it. I think it's really missing this. We feel good when we spend. Oh, look, I have a new shirt. There's no equivalent to feel good when we save or pay debt or buy insurance.
Yeah, that's a good point. We definitely try to incorporate that as much as we can into the WalletHub app. For example, we have a wallet score that looks at your savings, your retirement preparedness, and a bunch of other factors to see how healthy you are overall financially. And we try to send people notifications, stuff when they improve that.
But those things are not frequent enough. Like, right, if you think about the 10,000 steps, you want to reward people every day that they're good.
Yeah, that's a good
Yeah.
point. Like you
It
save today, saving streak type
that's
thing.
right. That's right. Yeah.
Very interesting. I don't want to take up too much of your time. I just have a couple more questions, but we've talked about what people should do, and I think we've hinted around a little bit what mistakes they make. But is there anything that you want to call out in terms of common mistakes people make when they're trying to save money very quickly?
So I would say that a common mistake on spending is that we don't feel that we're spending when we have a credit card. Everybody gets surprised at the end of the month by their credit card bill, and we don't seem to get better at it. It's because we don't think deliberately about opportunity cost. But there is opportunity cost, and we don't think about it. So that's a big one. And when we have cash, it helps a little bit because we see the cash going down. When we have credit, it just goes up, and we don't pay attention. So that's one. The second thing is that when people have credit card debt and they don't think they can get back to zero, it's called the what the hell effect. I'm not going to get to zero. Let me buy this thing anyway. What's the difference? And it's true that for today, you're not going to get to zero, but long term, it's very, very tough. So we need to understand that with credit card come some challenges, and with credit card debt come some challenges that we don't feel that we can make it. You know, we all know this, the what the hell effect in diets. On a diet, you just had the muffin, you say, oh, I'm not a dieter today, I'll start next Monday. The same thing happens with money. You're saying, oh, I was trying to be good, I just failed. Let me continue. No. We need to fight against that. So I would say credit card debt, and what's called the what the hell effect are things we need to worry about.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely found myself being victim of that, and I think we do a lot of studies on credit card debt, and people have way too much of it. It's way too expensive, and it's definitely easy to feel like you can't get out of that. But people definitely can. And then I guess just lastly, is there anything we've talked about, kind of replacing or trying things you haven't tried before, cheaper alternatives, but is there anything else that people can do to make saving more sustainable? Is it all psychological or something they need to kind of just build into their daily habits?
Yeah. So first of all, saving is what's left after we finish spending. They are linked. Like we call it saving, but it's really delayed spending. We'll spend it at some point. We need to figure out what are the expensive habits that we have that are not buying us a lot of happiness. That was the point about the credit card audit. What am I spending money on that is not buying me the happiness? Let's cut that. You need to free some money to start with, right? And now you can say, let me take that and put it into better use. We also need to understand that some of the things that we think we can't give up now, and if I tell you, oh, give that up forever, you would say, no way. Start by giving it up for 6 weeks. We are very, we change a lot. We think we're static, but we change a lot. If I say, manage without whatever, cable TV for life, you would say, I can't do it. I said, do it for 6 weeks. Not asking you for life, just do it for 6 weeks. Or make coffee at home for 6 weeks. Like, look, just try it. Or take lunch to work. You could say, oh, I never have time. Just try it for 6 weeks. Don't try. We're much more adaptable than we think. And I recommend trying things for a few weeks and seeing if it's going in the right direction.
It's great advice. Thank you very much. I think you've given us plenty to think about and everyone can try out. It doesn't have to be so scary and it's not permanent. We can dip our toes in the water and see how it feels and go from there.
Yep. And if you live in a family, make it a joint exercise.
Yeah, it's a lot easier with company.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
My
We'll have to
pleasure.
have you on again soon.
Anytime. Take care.
Thank you.
Okay. Before we call it a day here, I want to add a couple more practical things to the list to give some people more of an idea of some tangible ways to go about saving significant amount of money over the next few weeks. You can do things like cooking at home. This might seem obvious, but a meal you make yourself can cost $4 to $6, for example, while a restaurant meal often costs $15 or more. So if you do that consistently, you're saving a lot of money right there. Another kind of obvious but necessary thing for a lot of people is to cut out luxuries from their budget and to sell things they don't need. This is easier said than done, but with some careful budgeting and some self-honesty about what you really want and need and are going to continue using, what you could live without, you could cut some expenses from your budget and add some extra income, get the double whammy there. You can also trim your bills. For example, WalletHub's subscription manager can help you kind of remember or identify subscription costs, recurring bills that you didn't remember that you were paying for, or some others that you had, but you maybe haven't been using recently. And that can give you the opportunity to go and cancel those and save some money there. A lot of people also don't know that or realize that you can call your phone or internet or cable provider, what have you, and see if they have any special offers. They might be willing to give you a deal to keep you as a customer. And finally, just kind of shopping smarter for essentials. There's some things that you're not going to be able to cut out completely, but you can reduce the cost of those by using digital or physical coupons, using price comparison apps, buying generic brands instead of name brands, and even just kind of making a rule to sleep on it before making a big expense. The average shopper spends more than $280 a month on impulse expenses, and if you can cut those out, you're more than halfway there to your $500 in a month savings goal. So, just kind of taking the common sense steps is it really does work. Just try to find what works in your lifestyle and incorporate it, and you'll look up and you'll find hundreds of dollars in savings if you do things right. All right, I think that's about it for today. It's been a lot of fun learning a little bit more about money and the world with all of you. So let's do it again pretty soon. Because if you're not penny wise, your monthly savings may never get that high. and you might have to kiss your financial goals goodbye. That's scary. Thanks again to Lee Enterprises and Wallet Hub for helping put this all together, and thanks to you for listening.
Insurance isn't one size fits all. That's why drivers have enjoyed Progressive's Name Your Price tool for years now. With the Name Your Price tool, you tell them what you want to pay, and they'll show you options that fit your budget. So whether you're picking out your first policy or just looking for something that works better for you and your family, they make it easy to see your options. Visit Progressive.com. Find a rate that works for you with the Name Your Price tool. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.